Shalom LaYudim, Shalom LaBnei Noach, Shalom LaGoyim. It's the evening of the second day, Erev Rosh Chodesh Beis, Be'iyar, Tavshin Ayin Hei, Parashas Acharei Mos, Kedoshim. The evening of the first day, Sunday, 19 April 2015, webcasting from the guilty state of Israel, as seen through European eyes. That was the message last Thursday, more or less, from 16 of the 28 European Union member states to EU Mistress of Foreign Affairs, Federica Mogherini, age 42, former member of the Italian Communist Youth Federation. In their letter to her, they requested that she proceed with the project of requiring Jewish produce and products made in the occupied Palestinian territories, was the language, products sent to market in the Union, they be so labeled and thus by implication tainted. The letter said people have the right to know where a product is made. In fact, these European peoples want to boycott Jewish produce and products created in Judea and Samaria, areas that they insist upon calling the occupied Palestinian territories, which says it all. For these European peoples, Israel is a criminal state for squatting on and dominating land that does not belong to Israel, but to the ancient ones, the ancient Palestinian people. These are their territories, and Jews have no right to live in them, let alone work in them. In fact, what is sent by Jewish industry in Judea and Samaria to Europe already is marked as such, but only to customs officials who ensure these products do not enjoy customs exemptions like other Israeli products. What is clear is that for Europe, there's no property dispute here. There's nothing to talk about between Israel and the Palestinians about where to draw a boundary between the two peoples. For these Europeans, there's no dispute. All the land in Judea and Samaria that Israel has ruled since 1967 does not belong to Israel. And Israel must return this real estate to its rightful owners, who for thousands of years have been the ancient Palestinians. Official Israel here, of course, blew a gasket last Thursday and fired back, and did so across the board, across the political spectrum. Now Europe is saying that it's not enough that products from Jewish Judea and Samaria be denied leniencies. Now the products must be clearly labeled for the retail customer so that he or she can see that the product was not made in Israel, but made in the occupied Palestinian territories, which the Jews unjustly continue to occupy. And while yours truly shares the exasperation with yet another generation of European anti-Jews, like Signorina Mogherini, that former Communist Youth Party enthusiast, yet another enlightened radical leftist who sees the Palestinians as third-world victims of capitalist Jews in the service of world imperialism, or thoughts to that effect. But I part company from the across-the-board anger here in Israel at the EU, for I think a real culprit in this affair is Israel itself. There's something logical and understandable in the EU antipathy to Israel, for Israel has never denied that this territory really is Palestinian territory. After all, this was on display in 2009 at Bar-Ilan as the Prime Minister spoke, and he went to, so to speak, the baptismal font in the Church of the Enlightened and confessed his belief, too, that the Palestinians deserve and have a right to a state in Judea and Samaria. All that needed to be worked out were the details. And thus Israel is complicit in the European view of things. Israel in 1993 did this on the White House lawn, and Bibi did it again 16 years later. Israel accepts that Judea and Samaria rightfully belong to the ancient ones, and for that, Israel has been tongue-lashed in the West ever since. By contrast, the proper response, I think, to the demand for a Palestinian state has always been the same. From the get-go, Israel should have backed up and supported Golda Meir of blessed memory. She said there never was such a people, and I would add Judea and Samaria is rightfully the property of the state of Israel in perpetuity. The correct answer to the demand for a Palestinian state in Judea and Samaria is there are no Palestinians, and they have no right to what is rightfully our land, rightfully ours according to the League of Nations mandate, which was incorporated into the United Nations Charter by right. It's embedded in the United Nations Charter that Israel is the rightful owner of Judea and Samaria. And because Israel does not do this and has never responded this way, Israel becomes the target of Euro anti-Jews like Signorina Mogherini and other Europeans, who, exactly like their forebears, point the finger of guilt at the Jews. In generation after generation, the Jews have been considered guilty of one crime or another. For generations, her forebears blamed us Jews for murdering the man from Nazareth. And today, thousands of years later, we stole Palestine from the Palestinians. So I find Israeli indignation at the latest European anti-Jew attack a bit annoying. Israel leaves itself open to such nonsense. The fantasy of there being such an historic people with national rights identical to Jewish rights in this land, why Israel goes along with this when all the historical evidence is on our side? For 40 years after the First World War, Haji Amin murdered hundreds under the banner of Southern Syria. He was in opposition to the creation of a jurisdiction called Palestine by the League of Nations and the Jewish Agency, which the League basically called into being to administer the new jurisdiction under the Muslims. There was no country called Palestine, as they call it these days. People want to know why Israel's PR is so bad, and this is why. Once you swallow the poison pill called the Palestinian narrative, Israel can have no PR. The Palestinian narrative is a fairy tale, but what bloody consequences it has led to. Once you accept the fantasy of a Palestinian nation with national territorial rights here, you condemn Israel to exiting this territory as expeditiously as possible. And if you don't, you're branded an occupier of land that does not belong to you. Israel has never claimed the right to this land and never refuted the counterclaim of the Ishmaelites that the Palestinians have as much right to this land as the Jews do. Major headline in J-Post hard copy on Friday morning, for example, was, quote, "Palestinian man runs over Israeli." We talked about that last time. That was basically the headline. What's important here is the first two words, "Palestinian man." And I want to know why. I mean, what is Palestinian about this fellow who did this terrible thing? In truth, there's nothing Palestinian about him. Not his language, not his religion. He has no Palestinian history in his head. There is no book in any language, in any library, recounting the history of this allegedly ancient nation, and there never will be such a book. So why call this Arab murderer, this Muslim murderer, a Palestinian? This is bad journalism, if you ask me. Israelis have been their own worst enemies, and never shooting down the monumental historical lie of this allegedly ancient nation that has a right to a state here. The League of Nations said nothing of such a people. The mandate was to create a Palestine that did not exist and explicitly create it as a Jewish homeland. The sky will not fall if Israelis start broadcasting the truth that the two-state solution, that anti-Semitic fantasy of driving hundreds of thousands of Jews from their homes, is history. The dragon of that lie of Palestinian nationalism must be slain. To mix the metaphor, popped like a balloon, for it is the root cause of all the hostility in our time. Palestinian nationalism has taken the place of primeval Christianity with its hatred of Jews for the crime of deicide. Today the Jews are guilty of having stolen an entire country from an entire people and won't give it back, not even the 22% of Palestine that is known as the West Bank. Hence the European Union, having never heard Israel's counterclaim and refutation of the bogus claim of the enemy, and the EU calls this land the OPT, as it's known at the territories that belong to the Palestinians and not to the Jews. This is the narrative in the mind of that anti-Jewess Mogherini, whose hostility was blatant and can be seen in the videos and still photos of a joint session in front of the press she had with Prime Minister Netanyahu some weeks back. The day before, or after, I think, she also was in Ramallah, meeting the quack doctor of history and terrorist murderer Mahmoud Abbas, and what a difference in demeanor. With Bibi, she was sour, and cold. With the Jew killer, she was all smiles. If Israel wants to change minds in Europe, Israelis have to change their own minds first about just who these phony Palestinians really are.
שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובב מטללי רסיסים האל העונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שזופת שמש לחוצת פטרוסים מרודי התנובב מטללי רסיסים האל העונה בעת רצון עמוסים מגנו לכל החוסים שלח רוחך הטוב להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיב נחלה צביינו ממך מזון לכולם שנתנו תיאטר באב מלכוש ותושלם והשמיים ייתנו תלם רקע מה למלות ורסיסי ברכה לחם לאוכל ומרפא וארוחה היות הוגדת נסוחה ככוכבים בהילה להחיות גביינו לקדמותה תשיב נחלה צביינו ממך טוב לכל יימצא ביריינו הלא אתה תשוב תשוב תחיינו
Yeah, Israelis have to rethink their views of just who these so-called Palestinians really are. There is absolutely nothing Palestinian about them. What they are is Arabs and Muslims, mostly. In this, they are the same people who brought down the World Trade Center. There's no moral difference between those 19 suicide freaks in those airplanes and the suicide freaks we have had here, hundreds of them, who massacred Jews on buses and bus stops, restaurants, and the middle of city crowds. This came to mind in the report on Friday in J-Post with the headline, quote, Ehud Barak challenges PM to take action against Iran. As it turned out, this was J-Post reporting on the current Time magazine with its list of the 100 most influential people on the planet. Ehud Barak painted a picture of his old comrade in arms, the prime minister, as not acting tough enough with Iran. He said, daring actions are needed, not just words. And he specifically spoke of an attack on Iran and to, quote, boldly engage the region's moderates against terrorism, radicalism, and Iranian hegemony. He also said this, quote, Netanyahu is basically right about Iran and our risky neighborhood, but he can fail to seize opportunities. And on the Palestinian question, he grossly ignores the slippery slope awaiting Israel in the form of a one-state solution, close quote. And in reading this, I was reminded, or rather I was transported back 50 years in my mind to my first time in Israel, working on a kibbutz. Israel is a very different place these days than it was then. Then the kibbutzim were in absolute control of the country, of its culture, its economy, its politics, the army officer corps, the pilots. Only 3, 4, maybe 5% of the people lived on the kibbutzim and the moshavim, the collective villages, but they ran the show. They provided the top officers in the army and, I say, the Air Force pilots, leading politicians and labor leaders. And was on such a kibbutz, I spent that summer working in the fields and getting to know Israelis. Posted on this border kibbutz as well was a unit of IDF soldiers from the Labor Movement Youth Group before the army. These were childhood friends who whose dream was to build another border kibbutz, one of their own. They were there for two reasons: to provide added manpower for protection against Fedayeen raids across the border from Gaza, and also to learn how to farm. I also got to know the permanent kibbutzniks there, and in the words of Ehud Barak on Friday, I heard their voices again. Good people. Kibbutz life has its attractions. Only when it came to politics, I found their social democratic ideals, like those of my non-Zionist but still social democratic great-parents, grandparents, rather flabby. Also of note, which surprised me, was their labor Zionist analysis of anti-Semitism, which I had never heard and really shocked me. Having grown up surrounded by Gentiles and experienced their anti-Semitism, I knew their anti-Semitism had no base in reality, and it was totally irrational. I was amazed at how these Israelis, though, had swallowed the anti-Semitism of the world and believed the Jews were at fault for it. Their idea of being the chosen people and not breaking bread with others because of the kosher laws, well, that brought it on, and they were capitalists and they were moneylenders. And these Israelis were determined to produce a new Jew who would be unlike Jews in the past. And as for Arab neighbors, why, they're just like us. And we can't come to an accommodation with them. We're reasonable people. They're reasonable people. Israelis like these haven't got a clue as to the depth of madness that anti-Jew hatred can incorporate. World War II was in large part the result of earth-shaking, delusional thoughts in the mind of Adolf Hitler and millions of others in Europe. The power of anti-Semitism and its craziness is something Israelis never personally experienced, and Ehud Barak certainly never experienced it growing up on his kibbutz, very much like the one I came to know. Born and raised and educated every day of his first 18 years with Jews and only Jews in his world, he never had the experience of living among non-Jews, and hence still does not really know them. Ehud Barak, remember, was also the fool about the time he became prime minister who said that if he were a Palestinian, he would join one of the PLO groups too. This is so typical of this way of thinking. These leftists refuse to see just how uncivilized the Arabs are when they produce nothing but murderers, terrorists, butchers, who they celebrate as war heroes. What Ehud Barak did at the time was attempt to exercise his leftist empathy for the other and to justify their savage slaughter of Jews here. Here he was last week warning Bimi about the Palestinian question that he grossly ignores, he said. It's a slippery slope to a one-state solution. That Ehud Barak does not see through the lie of the Palestinian question, as he calls it, is typical of his post-Jewish community of enlightened Israelis. He warns about the one-state solution when his vision of a two-state solution is really not of this world. No Israeli government in its right mind is going to retreat from the high ground, the hills of Judea and Samaria, and turn them over to the Arabians. Ain't going to happen. And as for fearing the one-state solution, that is the solution for Israel, provided it drops its politically correct neurosis and deals with the Arabs in the one-state solution, as it should. Israel has the right to retain every square meter it captured in 1967, and it is under no moral obligation to give citizenship to the Arabs on this land either. Indeed, the demand that we do is functionally inhuman. The Arabs in Judea and Samaria in every year of the Zionist Renaissance have produced murderers of our people, murderers without end. In 1967, we drew out the official Jordanian army, and we are under no rational or moral imperative to give the Arabs who remain behind citizenship and the right to vote in our Knesset. They do not deserve citizenship in our Jewish state. There are 21 Arab states, officially Arab states, and this is the officially Jewish one. And if they don't like living as a foreign non-Jewish element in our terms, on our terms, they're free to leave. We must treat them as individuals entitled to human decency, but that's not the same as giving them rights, equal rights to ours in our community. These people with a wretched record of butchering us all the time. And that was from the Song of Songs, Chapter 5, the first verse and half of the second. Speaking before of Ehud Barak and his leftist habit of misplaced empathy for the enemy and an imaginary moral equivalence between the two sides, Israel Hayom newspaper today said that on Friday, Obama said, now this is my translation from the Hebrew, that the U.S. May be flexible on relaxing the sanctions against Iran. He said, quote, part of John Kerry's role is to formulate formulas that will enable the other side to present the agreement as more acceptable in its political system. Close quote. Heaven help us when the Secretary of State thinks like that about those criminal terrorist Muslim priests. He seems not to know either that in their system, a dictatorship, no selling of the agreement to others is necessary. All that matters is the potentate at the top, Khamenei. And then, in nice contrast on the same page, Israel Hayom reported on an op-ed piece in the Washington Post yesterday by Natan Sharansky in which he asked, quote, When did America forget to be America? He claimed that Obama has systematically ignored Israel's pleas in the matter of the Iranian nuclear project. He said, quote, Obama believes that only after an agreement is signed will it be possible to expect Iran to change. And by that he meant, you know, keep its end of the bargain. Quote, as a prisoner of Zion, I cannot compare this approach to that of the U.S. and its dealing with the Soviet Union. The differences cry out to the heavens. He said of Obama that because he does not believe in the moral rightness of the West, he has surrendered the advantage that the U.S. had in its dealings with the Soviet Union, close quote. Indeed, under Ronald Reagan, the U.S. attitude toward the dip in Moscow was clear versus Obama playing PR agent for the Iranians. Sharansky is so right. Hashem Yerachem, Lord have mercy. Israel Hayom also reported that Mort Zuckerman, the real estate tycoon who bought U.S. News and World Report, called Obama's turning his back on Israel unforgivable. So, gradually, after all these years, some people are emerging to speak the truth about this Barack Hussein Obama fellow. Hence the vote last week by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, with all the Democrats on board. Though this remains a troublesome turn of events. The great Andrew McCarthy in National Review on their website describes the committee vote as potentially no real block to Obama. I myself, without his legal training and knowledge, had a feeling that this was so, for Thomas Jefferson thought that in foreign affairs the president's prerogatives were virtually royal, in the words of historian Henry Adams, versus in domestic affairs in which Congress has the upper hand. So, McCarthy explains why this Senate committee vote may even work to Obama's advantage, but at least one can be thankful for the evidence of some sobriety when it comes to this man. More than this Senate vote needs to be done, but at least serious opposition to this enemy of the West, enemy of the U.S., and enemy of Israel is now more out in the open.
וגם בכל רע רואה את הטוב, מחבר רסיסי העולם. וגם בכל רע רואה את הטוב, מחבר רסיסי העולם. בחברון ירהבות אהבה, להיות אחד בלבבות, לטרוח את הלב ולהבין שבסופו של דבר כולנו אחים. אהבה כאן בחברון ירהבות אהבה, להיות אחד בלבבות, לטרוח את הלב ולהבין שבסופו של דבר כולנו אחים. בנו של יצחק מלא אהבה, לכל רגב בארץ חיים, נשמתו נטועה בחלקת אדמה, נטועה בחלקת אלוקים. נשמתו נטועה בחלקת אדמה, נטועה בחלקת אלוקים. אהבה כאן בחברון עיר האבות, אהבה להיות אחד בלבבות, לפתוח את הלב ולהביא שבסופו של דבר לנו אחים.
יעקב תמיד את קולו ויוהב את בני ישראל ישמע יעקב תמיד את קולו ויוהב את בני ישראל שבסופו של דבר כולנו אחים אהבה גם בחברון עיר אבות אהבה להיות אחד בלבבות לפתוח את הלב ולהבין שבסופו של דבר כולנו אחים
Lastly, in keeping with the theme of leftists identifying with the enemy and finding moral equivalents, like an Ehud Barak, who still seems to believe in making a deal with the phantom Palestinians, Israel National News reported on Jerusalem Deputy Mayor Zalman Kalmanovich, whom the whole country knows as the first burn victim in the First Intifada, when he was hit with a firebomb. He's protesting a ceremony set for this week in Tel Aviv, connected to Independence Day celebrations on Thursday. It's a leftist event to, quote, acknowledge the pain and living on the other side, close quote. Yeah, translation here. Moral equivalence between the Israeli soldiers and civilians killed in action and terrorist atrocities. That's for Wednesday. With the terrorists who killed them in the name of Palestine. You know, they're just like us and aspire to statehood just like us. Kalmanovich asked for legal steps to block the abomination. But this will be the ninth year in a row these leftist entertainers and journalists, these narcissists, will hold the event. Well, I share his disgust, if not his demand, the event be prevented. Free speech does mean allowing obnoxious fools to have their say, too. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week, and I'll be back on Tuesday, God willing. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.